So we just had this killer gully washer storm, and it was right at the time that work let out, and everybody just got soaked going to their cars. But now the sun is out, and because everything is wet, it is super bright and shiny out there. So it is beautiful in Virginia right now.
This is Content Content, a bi-monthly podcast featuring the people behind the content. I'm Ed Marsh. Today's episode features a friend of mine and someone who is an enthusiastic advocate for technical communication, which is self-proclaimed. It's everybody's friend, Vicky Dill. Okay, you're going to have to tell me what a gully washer is.
Okay, so it's a time when rain comes down at a really high rate. And the ground right now is kind of saturated anyway, and so there's lots of puddles.
Okay.
So if we have gullies, then they would be washed.
Okay. We actually just had something similar here in New Jersey last night. It was just crazy rain up until, I don't know, maybe 11 a.m. here. And then it just, I guess the same thing. It just stopped. And now it's sunny and dry out. It's a little cool. But it was just like this bizarre thing where it was just disgusting down rain. And I feel bad for the farmers out here, because I know that they had a wet season last year that didn't go too well. So hope things are going down well in Virginia there.
Yeah, because we rely on our apples and we rely on a lot of our crops out here too. So Winchester is big on apples. We have a big apple blossom festival. And my town goes from like 20,000 people to 200,000 people.
Holy cow.
So the town people either love it or they hate it. And the people that hate it just leave town for the weekend and the rest of us enjoy it and party.
Yeah, I was just in Amsterdam a month or two ago, and we were there for King's Day, which is a humongous national holiday there. And someone told us that, you know, the city swells from like 50,000 to 150,000 people when the weather's nice. And it was just like, that's just, it's just so crazy and it's unfathomable. But it was a good time. And holy cow, the people in the Netherlands really know how to party.
And I enjoyed watching your pictures on Facebook. Thank you for posting so much. It looked like you guys were having a lovely time.
Yes, and I just got news today that my car that I purchased and picked up in Munich, Germany is actually has arrived in the States and just has to clear customs, and then hopefully I should have it really soon. So just a little excited about that.
Oh, so you didn't get to drive it home.
Would have been a little difficult and probably taken a lot longer vacation time than I actually had.
Yeah. Guess you can't really, there's no ferry boats right across the Atlantic.
No. So Vicky, you've been a longtime technical communicator. You work for a place called American Woodmark, and I would love for you to tell us about your backstory, you know, where you came from, how you became a technical writer, you know, and, how it led to you where you are now.
Okay. So, I was always good at math, and when you're a kid and you're good at math, they steer you into engineering and science. And at the time, technical writing was unknown to me. This would have been in the 70s, and I had no idea what it was. All of the technical writing, quote unquote technical writing, that I had seen like in high school or in college was just very dense text with hardly any white space, lots of references, and very unexciting, right? It was just kind of like a boring explanation. And it seemed to, I guess, those particular academic sessions, the situations, the more complicated you could sound, the better a grade you would get, which is not at all what technical writing is, right? Our whole job is to make things understandable and easy. Right. And so I didn't really ever think that I would become a technical writer. I wanted to be an engineer. Did get an engineering degree from Virginia Tech. I did practice as an engineer. First job was for IBM. I chose IBM because they were known for not laying their employees off, right?
Right.
And but then my division was sold, and a company that liked to lay people off laid me off. So I was looking for work. There was a downturn in, this is Washington, D.C. area, and so we were mostly defense, right? Cold War had just ended. Berlin Wall had come down. Defense was having a little kind of a not really a depression, but anyway, things were not booming in the defense industry. And a friend of mine is a technical writer. She's currently a technical writer, and her company was hiring. And they also, they were growing. We were gearing up as a country. We were gearing up for Y2K. You guys remember that, or maybe you're too young to remember that. But so from like the mid 90s until pretty much midnight on 1999, we pulled together and we worked this Y2K problem, and it was super great because we solved it, right? There was no terrible apocalypse. There could have been, but we pretty much solved it. And so anyway, her company was gearing up for the Y2K, and they were hiring for technical writers. And I knew I liked writing, and I had a couple of examples of things that I had written for IBM. And so she hired me on, and I worked for her, and that worked out great. And then after Y2K, the high tech industry no longer had a big problem, and so they didn't need as many of us. And so I got laid off a second time. No fun. excuse me. But I did, at that time, my husband decided that he wanted to hunt deer in his pajamas. And
okay.
You could not do that in the DC area. So we moved to beautiful Winchester, Virginia, here in the Shenandoah Valley. And I did find technical work here through American Woodmark. And I am loving this company. The corporate culture is so great. They value us. You just really feel valued as an employee. Yes. And as an example, you know, we had this terrible storm. By the front door on the way that leads to the parking lot, there is a big umbrella stand full of like dozens of umbrellas. So when you get that gully washer, what you do is you just take one of the umbrellas that the company owns and go safely to your car. And nice. Then you just bring it back in the morning because they know that we're coming back. And so, those are the kinds of things that my company does for us. And it just feels so great to work here. And we've got lots of IT. You know, we make kitchen cabinets, and you might not think that's very high tech, but it really is. We are very automated, and we have a pretty large IT organization. We have about, 100 people now. 60 of us work here in Winchester, and then the other 40 are kind of spread around the country. A lot of them are in Anaheim. And I'm super happy here. They're going to have to pull me away from this desk. I'm very happy here. And I love the kind of writing that I do because it's very much just-in-time kind of writing. We no longer do complicated online help systems. We had found that once we put Google Analytics on our complicated online help systems, and we found that people weren't really reading like everything. They read sort of a getting started type of a topic. And then once they made friends with the software, they didn't need the help anymore. And so I was able to then support more programs, more projects myself without having to hire another person. And we could do just the just-in-time thing. You know, it's very hands-on. It's some support on the phone, some support in email, that kind of stuff. And I really like that. I also like the face-to-face training and user support when I get an opportunity to do that. Or I can, we have Skype, so I can give people training or coaching using the Skype tool. So anyway, I love what I do.
I guess my question is, who are your users? Are your users the end users who were building the cabinets, or is it the people internally, or is it a combination of the two?
So I do internal support.
Okay.
I have written some for our customers. And our customers, we don't consider the homeowner as often to be our customers. They are frequently the customers like of Lowe's. So Lowe's would be our customers, or the Home Depot, or say NVR, which is a big housing builder. Those would be our customers. And so I did do some, we had some tools where our customers can order cabinets online. And so I built a series of training videos for those where our customers can order like a kitchen online. They can use the existing software that they use. Almost everybody uses 2020 Design, which is a CAD program that's widely used. And we can import, our software can import their kitchen design into then our ordering program. And it's not all that tricky to do, but I just made a few tutorial videos, and we have Google Analytics on them. And so we knew that people watched, they would watch the first three. So like if I made a library of like 10 tutorial videos, they would watch the first three. And by the time they've watched the first three, they've made friends with the software. And so, you know, I like the fact that there's not a focus on just more documentation is not necessarily better. We just want to make sure that what we provide is timely and it's targeted and it's what they need. So
that's interesting. Can you tell me a little bit more by what you mean about just-in-time writing? I mean, I'm assuming it's something other than you create a PDF or you create some online help and it's kind of static, or tell us a little bit more about that.
So just-in-time, at least the way that we do it here at American Woodmark, because we do also our organizational training sometimes as just-in-time training. We don't write it before somebody needs it. So it's based on a need, frequently in response to questions or some kind of feedback that we're getting. And so that way we don't end up documenting a whole lot of things that are already obvious and people aren't having trouble with.
Oh, that's cool. So do you find, have you found that that makes life easier? I mean, do you find that people still need hand holding, or have you seen have the evolution of your help system and your users, how has that changed?
So as we roll out programs, you do want to have some content for them at the rollout. Mm-hmm. So you might have a video or some getting started or things like that, but then you're pretty much responding, but you want to make sure that they know how to get help. Right. Mm. And so you may point them toward your online help as a getting started kind of a measure, but let them know that if they have questions, they can email or they can call our support center, that kind of thing. Mm. And so then we would respond to those, and then we would kind of keep an eye on what's going well. And then, like I said, once in the time they've made friends with the software, by the time they've watched the third video or the time that they've gotten through the getting started. Hmm. People only really need help, I think, when they're, or at least with the software that we do, it's pretty friendly. They only need help at the initial phase. And I always imagine that those people are really mad. if you're desperate enough to look in the online help, right, you have exhausted everything. There's no coworker nearby that can help you. You've read the screen probably. You pretty much exhausted all your personal resources. And so you're all by yourself. So you're alone, right? You may be scared, but you're definitely angry. And so I try to make the tone, you know, if I'm doing voiceover in a video, I try to make my tone very warm and very confident, you know, don't you be scared. I'm not scared. We're going to do this together. That kind of thing. And I try to make the tone of my writing the same way.
I could totally see you doing that. That's hilarious.
But I mean, isn't that our audience? Aren't they scared and pissed off?
Yeah, that's the thing. I always tell people at work that, you know, people don't come to online help because they've got nothing better to do with their day.
Yep.
So, they've got a problem, or they're, you know, like you said, they've exhausted everything else. They're frustrated. They're angry. So it's interesting. It sounds like you make it as friendly as possible. Now, do you do that with your documentation as well?
Yeah. Try to have lots of pictures. If possible, okay. And make it very clear, lots of white space, very few words, and none of them large. So yeah, definitely friendly as possible.
So have you found, I guess, with this just in time, I mean, you said that also that the software is pretty easy to use. So do you find that, you know, you've needed fewer resources or, you know, fewer headcount because you're essentially writing less, or is there more for them to do in a different role?
Yeah, we had one time had a staff of So I'm not in management. Just want that
Okay.
clear. I do not want to manage people, because I suck at the negative message. I love to encourage people. I love to mentor people, but I don't like having to deal with negative things. So
You and me both.
I'm out of management. I tried that twice, and I just said, no, this is not for me. But we had a staff of five at one time. Six, if you counted the summer intern. And now we're down to two.
Wow.
So that's a significant change. We're also not rolling out quite as much brand new software. We're just making enhancements. And enhancements don't take as much online help, I think.
That makes sense. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It's unfortunate, but I guess the efficiencies that you found were I guess you're almost a victim of your own success.
Which is okay, right?
Yeah,
And
that's true.
when you have a small staff, you end up doing the things that you like, right? You get to kind of pick and choose the kinds of things that you like to do. If you like to make videos, then you make a lot of videos. If you'd like to just write, then you can just write. Or if you like to tutor or do user support, you can do that too, because you're a small staff and there's only so much of you to go around.
So do you like doing the user support stuff? I mean, I couldn't imagine.
Very much.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it phone support?
Sometimes there are sometimes
Oh.
e email. Yeah, and I'm talking to somebody that's alone and scared and pissed off. But what I like is that they know that I'm a helpful resource. I like that they know
Okay.
that. Yeah.
Right.
And my attitude is I'm not scared. We're going to do this together. You know, people not as smart as you can do this, so we're going to do this together. And generally, you know, the first thing they do is if they email or call, then I'll get an apology. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I know you're busy. And it's like, I think to myself secretly, boy, I'm glad you called, because if nobody called, if technology was easy to use, I'd be out of a job. So I like doing this, and so it's good that people sometimes have difficulty. But then I think they trust. There's a lot of trust. And that's important, and I like that feeling. So,
Yeah, I agree with you that we already do, we do an internal product as well. And I always tell people that a technical writer is a librarian, a detective, and a translator. So I like that feeling of, oh, they come to you and say, oh, I need help, or can you help me find this topic, or I know this is in here somewhere, can you help me? Or being, like you said, the guy or the person who people go to and know they can get some information or some help.
right.
Very
So
cool.
that's a
So.
good job. We have lots of job satisfaction, don't you think?
I think so, and I always say that there, with few occasions, at least in my world, there's no such thing as a documentation emergency. So it's not
That's
like
right.
you're running around like crazy, or you're the guy who's fixing the online help at 3 a.m. on a Sunday.
So I did have a recent documentation emergency.
Oh, really?
And it's only the second one I've ever had. So, but it was recent, and I'll tell you about it. And it was because there was too much documentation. So we at my company, we're very security minded, and we hire white hat hackers
Oh, cool.
to try to get into our system. And I had some online help that was Google searchable,
Oh.
that I had really very clearly explained how to hack into our system.
Oh, Jesus.
I
Oh,
had given and it was very well written, and so they of course got
no.
in. So I had machine names, I had screenshots that showed, you know, the machine name and the username, and then all they had to do was kind of brute force a password,
Oh
and
no.
they were in. So hey, that was an emergency in reverse, so we ended up taking that down.
Yeah.
But yeah, when the vice president makes a beeline to your desk and your eyes get big and you're
Oh
like, what is going on? And yeah,
no.
documentation emergency. So
Okay. Well, that's a first for me. So nice. You've disproven my theory.
oh yeah.
Nice. But I want to talk about, I like the fact that you're using, sounds like you're doing some sort of data-driven content. You're using Google Analytics, which is awesome. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing with that, how it's been implemented, and what kind of information you're getting from that?
Sure. And I'm just a basic Google Analytics user. I'm not an advanced. I just look at the number of hits and the amount of time that people tend to stay on the page. Okay. So we keep an eye on what our users are actually using, right? Just to know what are the topics, what are the subjects that they actually go to? How do they get there? Because that's important. If we've written the software, then we have a help button on the screen that will open the corresponding topic in the online help.
Okay.
And so I look like, are they going from internally from the software and opening it up in a browser from that help button? Or are they going like to the main system? Maybe they've got a favorite on their desktop or something, the main system online help. And so I try to figure out how are they getting in and make sure, because those users are going to be more lost, right? They're going to be the ones that are going to have to depend on a search if you're getting in just kind of like to the homepage and not specifically to the topic that corresponds to the screen that you were on when you click the help button. So we try to keep an eye on that. And so therefore on that homepage, we try to anticipate what are they here for and make sure that we have addressed what the top three things that we think they're there for above the page fold so that they can see them on the screen quickly. And so that's how I focus my energy on what content to write and what to not write. Because I used to, when I first started working here, we were like completely documenting every button on the screen.
Right, yes.
And nobody was reading that.
No.
And so we stopped. I mean, like, and you'd have to do every button and like, you know, the thing that appears to be a floppy disk, if you even know what that is, you don't have to tell people what that is. They know that's the same button, right? And so more to focus, because their questions were more process oriented, you know, how do I find something? And so we tried to address those. And like I said, we put Google Analytics on our videos. We like to make a video or two or three, but some like there was one, we have a very high end line of cabinets for people like gazillionaires with a beach house, really, really nice, very, very nice, very expensive cabinets. And so the software that we wrote so that the boutique cabinet and, you know, home remodeling places can order our boutique line of cabinets, we made sure that there was lots and lots of online help and that it was very high quality. So we decided to make a video series, and I made 22 of those videos, and 22. And you think it's like a day and a half to do a 2-minute video, you know, it's like 10 hours to really do, if you're going to produce it well, to do a video. And so that was many, many days of effort. And it turned out that the users watched three. They watched the first three. That was it. And so the next time that we decided, you know, it looked very lush. When you opened up our video library, you could see that there were 22 videos addressing it, everything that you want to do. And maybe you would feel confident that way and just think, wow, this company, they've really helped me out. They've, you know, if I ever get into trouble, I don't have to be worried because I've got all of this video content. So it looked very lush, but in reality, we found that three is plenty.
Oh, that's funny. Trial, fail and try again, pretty much, right?
Yeah, but you know, you learn as you go.
Right. So I guess, I'm curious now, you're saying videos. Are they actually professionally produced like video, like movie? Or are you talking like an e-learning kind of thing or a little bit of
both? Yeah, a Captivate. We were using Captivate. So there were screenshots and then they had voiceover and all my videos. Okay. Consistently, if you get all the way to the end, you get applause. So I had applause sound effect at the end. So
that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I might have to do that. I don't know if that would go over well in my company, but that's pretty funny. I like that idea. Give them something to celebrate.
Well, none of my management is going to watch any of those videos.
It's true.
It's pretty safe. Yeah. So.
Well, we're just wrapping up actually for a video that's going firm wide. So that's 34,000, 35,000 people. So
wow,
Yeah, I'm not sure that would go over too well there. So I guess, why don't you tell me a little bit more? I mean, what is your day like? What are you doing every day? It sounds like you're talking to a lot of people. It sounds like you're reaching out to a lot of people. It sounds like people are reaching out to you. What's going on in a typical Vicki Dill day?
Okay. So we get up early in Winchester.
How early is early?
I'm usually awake at 4.
Oh my God.
And then I have a lovely cup of coffee drink lots of water to wake up. And I probably will start working about 6. By the time I come into the office, I've cleaned out my inbox. I've handled all the emergencies, because I do get, with the way that we've set this up, with the just-in-time, I do get a lot of email. Mm. And so from like 6 to 7:30, I'll clean that out so that by the time I get to my desk, that all the emergencies have been handled, because things happen overnight. We have a lot of people that work really long hours, and so they don't end up writing emails until the evening or the morning. And so I'll make sure that everybody gets what they need. Sometimes I'll run a report, like a training report, just to check to see how people are doing, who's running late. With the training, we do assign due dates. And so we want to make sure that management gets to see those so that they can encourage the employees to take their training. Monitor the compliant, the IT security training. As I said, we're really security conscious, and we actually had our CEO's iCloud account hacked, and our board of directors found out about it, and our CIO had to stand before the board of directors and talk about the Get Well plan. And one of the things that we implemented is this training program so that everybody knows exactly how to stay safe online. And that it involves a yearly training, because we need to stay ahead of the hackers and phishers and things like that. We also people don't like it, but we do this. We have a company that we pay to send everybody an email that's actually a phishing email.
Okay.
And just see who clicks on the link or will sign in or give up their password or something like that. People don't like it when we do that, but we feel like we really need to test whether or not the training is effective. And then for those that come up vulnerable, meaning they don't pass the test, they just take more training just to make sure that they've gotten a second time to see the, here's how to avoid phishing, here's how to avoid spear phishing, here's how to avoid social engineering, that kind of thing. And so I'll run those reports on a regular basis and then just give the feedback to management so that they know who they need to encourage to take training. And that's a morning's a good time to do that because it's quiet. You don't want to do it in the middle of the day because you want everybody who may be in progress with the training, you want to make sure that they've had a chance to complete, right? So like if you run your report at noon and somebody then finishes their training at like 5 p.m., they won't be in your report. So you want to make sure that you do it at the very end, which in my case is the very beginning of the day.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So that, and those do get, those go to the recipients of that report and that email. They make big paychecks. So I need to make sure that the data is accurate because, it's going to some pretty high level people. So I start my morning pretty clean, and then there'll be lots of calls, and we have projects, and we have lots of meetings. I am on a couple of teams here. One of them is the project management team. We're trying to sort of formalize and quantify how projects are managed here. We're not demanding that everybody take PMI or get PMI certification, but we want to make sure that things are done sort of in that way. And we historically have been really good at like the middle part of the process of projects, but we need help on the beginning and the end, you know, the tail end of the project. And so I'm on the team that does, is trying to quantify and then roll that out to the rest of the employees. And it's going to have a wide distribution. That will be training. That will be support. We're building SharePoint sites. So there'll be lots of content. Yeah. Because our, at my company, probably the same at your company, everyone is a project manager in some form, just like we're all entrepreneurs in some form, right? I have my business that I do during the day and you have yours. And I notice that people are relatively good project managers for most things. I have never seen anyone with their socks on the outside of their shoes. So they know how to get dressed, you know, and that's something that has a definite sequence. You don't want your underwear on the outside, right? Or your socks. Excuse me. But so we're trying to provide that support to all the employees. Our main targets, IT and engineering, but just about anybody could be a project manager. So that's a team that I've been on recently. And yesterday we had a big 4-hour meeting because we're trying to do a work breakdown structure. And the kinds of people that are on the project management team, they are extroverts. And they are people who like to manage projects, right? And so you get a dozen of them in the room. And you practically need a chair and a lion tamer's whip because everybody is the alpha. And so there's lots of energy in the room. And so it was a very energizing meeting, even if it was a 4-hour meeting. We weren't bored, that's for sure. You know, and so my day can be some of that. There are a lot of meetings in my day, which is another reason to make sure you have a nice clean inbox at the beginning of the day. Some of my day is working on our cultural committees. My company has a very strong culture, which means like with the umbrellas, they just treat everybody well, or they try to treat everybody well. And so we have committees put together that sort of ensure that that's done. And the committee that I serve on is the Professional Growth Committee. And so we do things like, we're not trying to take over the HR training. We're just trying to sort of enhance. We're not trying to take over like an STC kind of a thing. We're just trying to enhance. And so we'll give people, we may have events that are like a life coaching, leadership building. We also put together plant tours. We have a couple of plants that are within a day's drive and tour back and forth from the Winchester location. And so we will get a bunch of the company's vans, the fleet of minivans, and we'll check those out for a day. And that way, because we're office workers, right? We do not see, and we know that we're making a product that's made out of wood, and there must be sawdust, and there must be, you know, there must be stain. There's all kinds of machining. We don't see any of that where we are. And so we try to take people out to the plants and let them actually see how cabinets are built. And one time we went to the distribution center, so we saw how cabinets were shipped, which was turned out to be very high tech. Their IT department was excellent. The trucks, all of the boxes that have the cabinets inside have got a label that has a code that can be scanned. And so we know, and the trucking company knows where every cabinet, every individual cabinet is all the time, because they track the trucks by GPS. And they have a system that automatically sends a text message to either the customer or maybe the homeowner when the truck is an hour away.
Oh, wow.
Because it knows the route. You know, it may not be an hour's drive, but it may have a couple of stops. And so an hour before your that way, if you're sitting at your office, you have time to get home and open the door. Or if you're, say you're doing a neighborhood development, you have a time to send the foreman. to receive those cabinets. It's super high tech and was very impressive. And so we want our employees to know about this too, just to have a kind of a feel for, even if you're just, let's say you're an accountant and you're working in finance, if you understand how the business works, it'll make you a better accountant, right? And then we have other programs that where people come and tell their individual stories. We'll feed you lunch. It's called the Lunch and Learn Power of Story. And people eat lunch while one employee basically tells their whole their life story or whatever they would like to disclose. And we've had some really, really good ones. We've had people disclose really scary, important things. We had one woman talk about her struggle with mental health and how she had been battling suicide. And she was brave enough to talk about that. And this was right before, so she's in an organization that raises money like for hotlines and things like that. And there was a fundraising walk the month after. And so she, at the end of her talk, she got people to sign up to participate in the fundraising walk. And because she was open and trusting enough to share that part of her story, we as a company were able to help raise $1,000 or more, which is just great for everybody. And there is a lot of trust. And we feel that if we trust one another, that our teams will work better. You know, if you trust the people that you work with. And one of the ways that we're building trust is with this story series. And I get to work on that, which is awesome. I get paid to listen to people's stories and plan lunch. I like to think about lunch.
Don't we all?
Yeah. And we do use one of the caterers that we use is 501c3. Oh, nice. And so we're contributing to the community and to their charitable efforts. They hire individuals that may have a physical or a mental challenge. And they teach them how to cook and how to be a waitress and, you know, how to stock and all the things that a restaurant does and give them life skills. And so we're supporting that too.
Oh, that's so cool.
This is great all around.
No kidding. That's really interesting. And I know you've spoken recently, I believe at Summit, didn't you, SDC Summit, about the Power of Story project?
I did, yeah. And that was so great because I had an icebreaker. And I had little rubber ducks, and if you could answer the icebreaker questions, then you got a rubber duck. And so I had taken about 24 of them, and the ducks were flying through the air. It was great.
I've seen you talk at Conduit about meeting etiquette and meetings, things to do with meetings, and I can honestly say that I've never been in a four-hour meeting in my life. So, you know, having an icebreaker, our meetings are usually either our meetings are try to be under half an hour as much as possible at the firm. An hour if you really, really need it. But, you know, I know that you spend time with icebreakers and all these things. And I'm like, I just can't fathom this. So can you tell us what it's like to be in a 4-hour meeting and how you could be cheerful for that long? And then I guess maybe create a presentation about that.
You want a presentation about that? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I did. One year I did talk about meeting management, and my company's got kind of a formula that I'd like us to follow with the meeting management. And we do begin with an icebreaker to get people talking. And it's really to get the introverts to talk, right? Because us extroverts, we'll just talk no matter what, but try to get, the icebreaker is if you have new people on the team, then you'll just do introductions. Icebreaker doesn't have to be, you know, anything complicated.
Oh, okay.
And we do also, one of the things that's really handy and saves the team a lot of work is that before every meeting, you will know the agenda. You will have received the agenda. And then before the meeting, early in the meeting, right after the icebreaker, we collect expectations. And so people are asked to say aloud what they expect to accomplish in that meeting, because it keeps you from getting derailed. You know, sometimes you'll be in a meeting and somebody will have an agenda that you're not going to address, and they'll keep trying to get back to it. right? But if you get that out and you write that down so that everybody can see, you know, I want to that somebody wants a decision on XYZ by the end of the meeting. That generally saves the team time if they know they're not going to get one, right? Because you can just say, we're not going to meet that expectation. Or like somebody in this 4-hour meeting, we were there specifically to do a work breakdown structure for the training that we were rolling out. And that was the only thing we're going to talk about. And there was an individual that wanted to talk about the vision of the team. And we created a parking lot and wrote that down so that the individual could see that at another time we will talk about the vision of the team, but we're not going to do that today. Because if we talked about the vision, we would have been there for longer than 4 hours.
Right. Oh, wow.
You want to make sure, and that collecting expectations at the beginning of the meeting really ensures that people know it's not a secret what we're here to do today and what we're not here to do today. And then, you know, and you can have fun expectations. You can say, especially if it's, let's say it's a training thing, you want to have fun, right? If you're going to have food brought in, that I expect that my food's going to be delicious, you know, so you can have fun expectations. but getting those out really helps, I think, your meeting run well, and people get what they need and they don't feel like, man, I've just wasted 4 hours. I'm never going to get back.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I always think of introductions at the beginning of a meeting as like, okay, let's just get to the point. But, you know, I guess, you know, I'll think about it differently now. I definitely will consider that.
So I haven't converted you yet.
No, I'm one of those, let's keep this meeting as short as possible. I have some people that I work with, interact with frequently, who are, okay, we have a half an hour. Let's make sure that we fill that entire half hour if we don't need to. And that kind of drives me crazy. But, you know, I guess there are things that we could do to manage our meetings better.
Well, and some meetings can be replaced by an email.
So, yes, yes. Yeah. I had one of those today, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, that's you know, that's why we have conference calls, and that's why we have mute all on our phones.
So you weren't necessarily paying attention, is what you're saying?
No, not really. It really wasn't my meeting, and it didn't affect me too much. I was just on the call because I had to. But it's one of those. Okay. Oh yeah. Hi. Thanks. Yeah, I'll take that call. I'll take that question. So. Yeah, it was one of those kind of, okay, that's great. You could have done it as an email. Thanks again. But it wasn't the end of the world, I guess. So go along the lines of your presentation in a meeting. You are a self-proclaimed TechCom evangelist. I know that you are clearly excited about your job and what you do at American Woodmark, but you do present frequently. Like I said, you're at Conduit Conference in Philadelphia by STC Philadelphia Metro. You know, you're at STC Summit presenting. I'm sure there's a few that I'm missing, but you are very excited about TechCom. And why don't you tell us a little bit more about what excites you and why that you're out there so much? I know you're also a volunteer at several levels of the STC, at the STC chapters and national. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that?
And one of my favorite involvements that's STC, sort of STC adjacent, is my the work that I've been able to do with George Mason University, because I definitely want to, you know, help out the bright young people, and I want to help them choose to become a technical writer. Because when I was in college or in high school, I didn't know, I had a false idea about what a great job technical writing is. And so I want to make sure that they understand what technical writing is. And there's a introductory class that is taught that the professors always ask for volunteers. Will you let one of our students interview you? And I always say yes to that. They ask me about my day and the kind of work that I do. And they're always surprised at the kind of work that we do. And I think that if we can do our best to help other technical writers, because STC has taught me so much And I want that to be a give and take kind of thing. I remember the keynote at the first summit that I attended changed my life, changed the way I do business, because she had the message. I can't remember who it was, what her name was, but I'll never forget her message, that we as technical writers, we were more like museum curators, that we had more in common with museum curators than we did with other kinds of writers. And that our job was to, because in the museum, you will have just an enormous amount of stuff, right? And some of it you're going to put right up front, and some of it you're going to put in the attic. No one's going to see it, right? And you want to guide people's path through the content. And that's so much like our job. And I was, it changed the way that I wrote. It gave me permission to not have to, I myself write everything or rewrite everything. I could let my system experts write, and I didn't have to get too caught up, because I'm curating what they have, what they've written. And I love the way my engineers and developers, I love the way they write, because it's always, you know, the code was obviously really hard to write. And so they talk way more about the struggle and the problems that they overcame than they do about what the code does.
Of course.
And our readers don't care, right? So I'll put, you know, I don't necessarily rewrite, but I will kind of like rearrange a lot of what they write. So anyway, because I've received so much from STC, and I'm the only writer in my IT area. There is one other technical writer that works in our materials organization. And so I really don't have a whole lot of people to learn from. And so I've learned so much from STC. And like I said, those summits have changed my life. So I love that. And so I love working with Mason, and we have tried to partner with their STC organization many times with through the DC chapter. And we just love working with them. We love supporting their professors in any way we can. They had an early flight, and so we did at the Denver Summit. We sat in their booth for the end of the summit raffle. And gave out the prize for them because they had early flights, right? And so we try to support them. That was just a small thing, but we were glad to do it. And anyway, we just, I love Dr. Heidi Lawrence. I'm going to mention her by name. I think she is just fantastic. Do you want to hear the story of how I met her?
Well, of course I do.
Of course you do. So as you know, I'm a badass bass player. I play bass. And I was in a band with a guitar player who kept telling me that my daughter is studying technical writing at Virginia Tech. She's getting her doctorate. I was like, oh, that is really interesting. Well, anyway, so she ends up being a professor at Mason. So I already kind of know her, right? Because I'm really good friends with her dad. And so the first time we met face-to-face at an STC event, where there's like all this hugging and, oh, I've followed your life, you know, because I'd known this guitar player, I'd worked with him for many years and sort of followed her journey, you know, through his eyes. And so Dr. Heidi Lawrence is really special in my book. And her dad, Dick, also. He's an excellent guitar player.
Nice. That's interesting. So I didn't know, I mean, I guess I should have known, but I didn't realize that that George Mason had a chapter, and I didn't realize, you know, that you were, I knew that you were involved in various SIGs and presentations and lots of that stuff. And also with the leadership of the DC chapter, but I didn't realize you were also involved with George Mason.
And we try to, well, the DC chapter tries to support them anytime we can.
I see. Okay.
And we do have joint events. Sometimes we speak, I think frequently in the fall, there'll be some kind of evening event, and we'll send a speaker or two. And sometimes we have like a lunch kind of a thing where students and working professionals can have lunch together. There are several of us on the curriculum advisory board.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Liz Poehler. Carolyn Klinger. Liz Herman.
Okay.
Several of us. So, like I said, we want to support them in any way we can. And they just kind of ask questions like, you know, what do you think, what skills do new graduates need? We want to make sure that we cover it. And so lately we've been talking about the soft skills. The hard skills are easier to teach. And sometimes those are the kinds of things that tend to rust and you'd have to learn new tools anyway. But the soft skills, you know, if you can teach people good interviewing, you know, good communication, that kind of thing, that can, so it's hard to structure a class around that, but it would be great if they could figure out a way to teach those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing, because it's certainly, you know, if you look at anything online, it's like, what are the skills that people are looking for? And primarily you hear soft skills, you hear communication, you hear, you know, be able to collaborate and stuff like that. And I guess, you know, how do you structure that, I guess, into a curriculum? I can't imagine that being easy, especially with the various kind of people that you have in technical communication. I know, you know, many people think that introverts are drawn to it, but we certainly have our share of introverts as well, or extroverts as well.
Yeah. Well, and a skill like, maybe a personal quality like curiosity, natural curiosity, I think that is absolutely essential in a technical writer.
Yes.
How do you teach that?
And it's so interesting because there are so many, I talk about this, I think, fairly frequently, but there's a technical writing subreddit on reddit.com, and it's fairly active. And there's, you know, there are some good content or some good back and forth in there, but a lot of them are, oh, you know, I want to be a tech writer. I am now X. Or how do I get a job in technical communications with X? Or do I have to be technical to be an X? And no one ever seems to be asking about, you know, can you ask good questions, or do I have to ask good questions, or, you know, what do I need to do, you know, with those soft skills? It's always, do I need to learn HTML, or do I need to learn FrameMaker? Do I learn, you know, do I need to do that? And it's like, no, you've got to, you know, yes, you need to do that, but you also need to learn how to talk to people, because that's a large part of your job.
Yeah. Lots of part of your day will be, you know, directing people and calming them down and, and curiosity. We need that.
Curiosity. Absolutely. And it's, you know,
we frequently have to figure out how the software works. The SMEs have no time.
Right. Like, you have to figure it out yourself, or, you know, figure out how to get that information quickly.
You know, what happens when I click this?
or what candy the developer you need to work with likes.
Yeah. Definitely.
What I'm getting at, well, I guess what I wanted to ask you finally is, I know that you are a badass bass player. I know you've performed at various STC summits, and I know you're performing quite a bit at home. I know you have a band with your own family. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? And then I know you're a really busy person. What else do you like to do when you're not talking about technical communication?
Okay. So, yeah, I do have a family band. We're called the Dill Pickers.
I love that.
Yeah. And we have played on the big stage at Apple Blossom for 2 years in a row now. So my husband, he can play anything with strings, but my favorite thing to watch him or listen to him play is guitar. And I don't know if you know this about the music business, but everybody plays the guitar. And so my husband, usually when he plays in a band with somebody else, he usually ends up playing like fiddle or mandolin or pedal steel or one of the other stringed instruments that he plays. But when he plays with me, he gets to play the guitar, and he's fantastic. He's just really, really good. We did meet at an open mic. I did see him play. I did fall in love with him immediately for that. And I remember I just loved the way his forearms looked. They were, because he was playing fiddle, I think, at the time. And he just, to do the bowing and the stringing, he just had these massive forearms. And I just remember thinking, I wanted those forearms wrapped around me. So that's my husband. And my son then is our percussionist. He plays an African drum called the djembe. And his name is Jim. So we feel like Jim on the djembe.
Djembe Jim.
And he is really very good at that. He also plays guitar because everybody plays the guitar in the music business. And but he can get a variety of sounds out of that djembe. He does play it using a brush that you would use on a snare drum, and he gets a snare sound out of that African drum, out of that djembe with this brush. And then he has a specific way that he hits it so that he gets the djembe is a very large-ish of hand percussion. It's a large drum, and he gets a really nice bass sound. I can't do it. I can't explain how he does it, but anyway, he knows how to hit the head just right so that he gets the sound of a kick drum. And so he's already got a kick drum and he's got a snare drum, and then the djembe can also sound like a tom. And so he gets pretty much everything except the cymbals. He can do pretty much the whole drum kit except the cymbals. And so he's very versatile, and we don't have to haul around a whole drum kit, which is great.
Yeah. One who's had to carry around a drum kit, yes, I absolutely agree.
Yes. So that's my band. I'm also really involved with my church and my community. The shout out to my peeps at The Exchange. That's the name of our church. We do meet in a coffee house. We're a small group. There's probably about 20 of us. And if we all show up, we don't fit. So people have to take turns being on vacation. And we do meet together for worship and prayer and support and fellowship and all that stuff. But one of the important things that we do is get really involved in our community. My pastor is going to be speaking at Pride Day. Winchester has a Pride Day. And my pastor's been asked to speak. Last year we had a booth. And basically what we did, we had a sign that said, we're sorry for how the church has treated you. And we want you to know that Jesus loves you, so do we. And it was like a day of hugs, you know.
Oh, cool.
Because the people just were like, do you mean it? And we're just like, yeah, come and hug me, you know. And so it was I must have gotten hugged 500 times that day. And it was awesome, a day with 500 hugs. We participated in I might be saying this wrong. It's an iftar, which is basically a feast to break Ramadan. And we felt like it was important for us to go to the community iftar. And so we're really, really involved in our community. Next week is Vacation Bible School, which we don't call Vacation Bible School. We call it Peace Camp. and because it's got the theme this year is Who is My Neighbor?
And oh, interesting.
So we love that theme. That's a really cool theme. And last year's theme was on making peace, figuring out ways to make peace. And we feel like that's really important too.
Very cool. Very cool. So it sounds to me like you're someone who likes a sense of community or likes being an integral part of a community and helping people out in that community.
Very much so. I am an extrovert, so being in a community.
That's true.
Being in a community is very energizing.
I've seen your boots at a conduit.
I love those shoes. They're not good for driving, though, Ed.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah, they're not good for driving.
Yeah, I can't. I do not have any boots to wear for driving, so okay. I don't have any boots at all. So, well, any cowboy boots, I should say.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Vicky, why don't you tell us where we can find you online?
Oh, okay, so you can find Vicky Dill online. Vicky is spelled with a Q.
Yes. I should have mentioned that at the start. Why didn't I say that?
Okay, so with a name like Vicky Dill, it's spelled V-I-Q-U-I-D-I-L-L, just like a pickle. I am so Googleable that you will find me. I'm on Facebook, Insta, Twitter, LinkedIn. I know I have more accounts. So I can't remember what they are. Snapchat, although I don't understand Snapchat. You can read, there's a bio about me on the Washington, D.C., the SDC Washington, D.C. Metro Baltimore website. So you can find out more about me there. I do love to connect with people. So do reach out. And I do love to connect with people. I love musicians. I love writers. I love thinkers. Yeah, I do for the instructional design and learning SIG, we do have our webinar series, and we're going to be setting up another one with Ed. We do have one recorded webinar with Ed, and if you go to our website, the IDL SIG website, you will find that recording because Ed's a great speaker. He's not just a great interviewer. So,
well, thank you, and that's I did present, I think, last year, and it was a talk I gave at Conduit, and I think you mentioned we may be doing something similar again this year with my talk from Conduit. So, yes, thank you very much for that. I'm excited to present. I'm glad you think I'm a good presenter because I still think I have a lot of work to do. But
you know, nobody likes their own hair. Nobody likes the sound of their own voice. Nobody likes their own pictures. Nobody likes their own presentations. But Ed, people love your presentations. The only person that doesn't like them is you. So suck it up.
Me and or Bernard, I guess.
Oh, Bernard, hate in his world is really love.
God, I'm going to tell him that next time.
Yeah, but if he can publicly get you, then you know he loves you.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
So.
All right. Well, on that note, you could find me at edmarsh.com. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm pretty active there as well. We'll set up a link to the SlideShare for the SDL SIG presentation and also my other presentations. You can find them on slideshare.net. And I think that's it. Go out there and create some good content. Thank you, Vicky.
Thank you, Ed.